For members only. Golf Smarter number 332, published on May 8, 2012.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Zen Golf Short Game with Dr. Joseph Perrin.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter for members only, Dr. Joe.
Thanks, Fred. Great to be here.
Thank you very much. Now, even though we recorded our first conversation, usually I'll just like one right after the other, but we've gone days now and we've had to both had time to think about this. But I do want to get back to a couple things that I brought up at the end. And one of them is a short game routine. I know that if I ever show my frustration on the golf course, it's when I'm within 10 to 15 yards of the green and take my shot and I'm only 7 or 8 yards from the green. To me, it's like, why is this so difficult? This is supposed to be the easiest thing. I'm so close. I just went 450 yards and two shots, and now it takes me 6 shots to go another 12.
Well, people typically tighten up and jab at the ball with their with their short game. And I discovered this while I was playing. I was, just as you described, I was maybe 20 yards off the green on a tightly mown fairway, and I made what I felt were really exactly the kind of practice swings that I wanted to make, just kind of nipping the surface of the grass, not digging in, but definitely clipping the surface of the grass. And then I set up to the ball and jabbed and sculled it right over the green. And I went,
I wish I could just get away with just the ah.
If I had hit the ball with my practice swing, that would have been fine. So I dropped another ball, and I said, I'm just going to pretend this ball isn't there, and I'm going to make another practice swing, and it goes, voop, and it zips up and stops 2 inches from the hole.
So the moral of the story is?
I said, that's it. From now on, I'm never hitting another shot with anything but my practice swing. So I went to test it out. I went and got the ball that I'd sculled over the green, and it had gone up a slope, so I had a down slope back onto the green in kind of fluffy grass, very different than the tight lie. So I made the practice swing, you know, put my weight down the slope and all of those things you're supposed to do, made my practice swing through a patch of fluffy grass just like the one the ball was sitting in. And then as I walked, I set up to the ball, I said, okay, one more practice swing through that grass, and pretended the ball wasn't there. And I made the practice swing, the ball popped out, landed on the green, rolled down a foot from the hole. I said, that's it. I got it. So this is the practice. This is the short game routine that I teach people, and that is you find your ball and check out the lie and find a patch of similar grass. Usually people just, you know, set up 3 inches from the ball right next to it and swing their putter through the grass, their wedge through the grass. No, no. Find a similar patch of grass to the way the ball is sitting.
And a similar lie.
Well,
if you're downhill or the grain is going the opposite direction, type of thing, right?
And what you have to do is you have to make your practice swing and pretend there is a ball there. Because I see people swoosh through the top of the grass, and then they get to the ball, and they have to dig down, and it's a whole different swing.
Right.
So you have to dig down through. If your ball's sitting down, go down and find the bottom of a similar patch of grass. So you make a swing as if the ball is, as if there is a ball there, and you go down as deeply as you need to. If it's sitting up on top, you sweep across the top, but you do it the way the ball is actually sitting. And you do that in your practice area. And what I want you to do is not just swish back and forth. People just swish, 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 swish. No, you make the swing through, hold the finish, and say, is that the one? And what I mean by that is you have to picture the way you want the ball to come out, land, and how much you expect it to release towards the hole. So is that the swing that's going to produce your picture? Ask yourself, is that the one? You hold the finish that long. that you ask, is that the one? Then you say either yes, you can confirm it with another one, or if you say no, then go in there and do it again until your answer, when you say, is that the one, the answer is yes. Then you walk, you set up to the ball, and all you're doing is aiming and getting your setup, because you're going to try and make exactly the same swing. And you say to yourself, or say it out loud, one more practice swing just like that through the grass, not at the ball.
Yeah, I like that.
The grass. And you try to almost look past the ball. Imagine it's not there, and just look at the grass where you want the club to go through the grass, and you make your swing. Now, if you do it properly, there should be a moment of panic right then. And the reason you should have that little moment of panic is you should have convinced yourself that you weren't really swinging at a ball, but just swinging through the grass. So the moment of panic is realizing the ball has taken off and you didn't try to hit it. So that's why the moment of panic. But what usually follows, if you've really done it properly, is a soft floating shot. See, because you're not hitting at a ball, you're just sweeping through the grass. Or even if you're digging hard down through the grass, the ball floats out, lands hopefully where you intended, and releases. If it doesn't follow the path that you pictured, it just means that your guess on the practice swing wasn't quite the right size or force of practice swing. So, elements of the routine. Find a patch of grass similar to the way the ball is sitting. Make your swings through that as if the ball is there. Hold the finish till you get the one. Then make your actual swing as if the ball isn't there. And observe the results. And most people's intuition is pretty good, and you'll be quite pleased and delighted with the results that you get. If it doesn't come out the way you thought it would, you learn something from it. And so you know that you can make a bigger or smaller swing and get the results you do want next time.
Yeah. What my frustrations will be is sculling it and going all the way across the green or coming up short. I found that picking a spot, trying to find that spot where it's going to land, and just focusing on that helps me as well. But usually I come up a little shorter than I had hoped, because I'm afraid, oh my gosh, if I take that swing, I'm going to skull it,
Yes, that's right.
That really pulls me back.
And that's a very typical thing, because I see people making practice swings that are bigger than their actual swing.
Mm-hmm.
And they think they're trying to get a feel for how the club goes through the grass. But what happens is, subconsciously, you make those swings, you get up to the ball, and subconsciously you know, if I make a swing that big and that forceful through the grass, that ball's going all the way over the green.
Yep.
So you decel, which the same thing happens in putting strokes. Mm-hmm. You decel, and then the ball kind of limps up there. And even if it carries as far as you pictured, it doesn't really have anything on it and just kind of dies there. So that's why it's so important that you make a realistic swing, as if you were swinging at a ball, not just sweeping through the grass. A realistic swing is if you're swinging it at a ball, and then reproduce that at the actual ball, but only intending to swing through the grass. All right? The other thing that happens is, if you pick a spot, you get too careful and try to be too perfect. So I want you to pick an area for it to land. If I tell you to take if you look at a table sitting on the other side of the room, and I tell you to toss a quarter, and if it doesn't land in the cup, right in the cup sitting in the middle of the table, you made a bad throw, you're going to get very tight and try to really guide it there. Mm-hmm. If I say, aim at that cup on the table, but anywhere on the table is a good shot, you just toss it. You don't even have to look. You just kind of toss it sidearm and boom, right in the middle of the table. So I want you to see an area. Give yourself at least a three-foot circle to land in when you're hitting a pitch or a chip. And if you can, give yourself a 5-foot circle to land in.
Yeah. depending on how far you are.
Well, no. Give yourself a 5-foot circle to land and say, you know, I'm going to land towards the middle of that circle, but anywhere in there, I'll end up within 5 feet of the hole. Fine.
Great.
Much better to give yourself room to play. Mm-hmm. Instead of trying to land exactly on a spot with your chip. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I like it.
Good.
I like it. And I thought for sure you were going to say, so the moral of the story is always hit a second ball.
Well, that second guy is really much better than the first.
Because it's always going to be better. So just go ahead and hit it. Forget
it's
it. Hit
we
another
hit
one.
It bounds and then we tee one up and we hit a good shot. And everybody says, you know, you got to let that second guy hit first.
Yeah, exactly.
or we call it, we sometimes call it the second team All-American. That if my second team guy played, he'd be an All-American.
Oh, right.
Very okay. Good. So that is the idea that the second one you don't care about. So you just swing the club the way you would on your practice swing. Hey, and it turns out pretty well. Yeah. So the moral of the story is use your practice swing to hit the ball.
Will do, coach.
I have another interesting one for you.
Go for it.
And this happened in a lesson. I had 3 18-20 handicappers that came for a corporate client appreciation day. Mm-hmm. And I offered those companies bring their clients out for a Zen golf experience with me.
Nice.
We work on the putting green. We work on the range. Then we go play 9 or 18 holes on the golf course. So I'm watching these guys hit on the range, and they're all either chunking or scooping or thinning. And I ask them a key question. I say, when you make a swing, you bring the club up away from the ground, you bring it down toward the ground, and then you bring it past, and when you're on the through swing, you bring it up away from the ground. Where is the lowest point in that swing arc? And two of them said at the ball, and one said behind the ball.
Ooh.
The actual answer is
in front of the ball.
A few inches in front of the ball.
Right.
And I said,
I wish I was there. I would raise my hand. I know.
Have you ever seen on TV where the pros, the club head in slow motion hits the ball, then enters the grass, and the lowest point in the divot is several inches in front of the ball, mm-hmm. and then it comes up. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys said, yeah, I've seen that, but I thought that was just for the pros.
Oh,
isn't that amazing?
Oh, that's really interesting.
I thought it was just for the pros. I thought we were supposed to hit it right at the ball. And so I said, no, it's pretty much for everybody. The club is designed so that the face impacts the ball and then the leading edge continues down further into the grass and the lowest point comes up. And my friends Bobby Clampett and Andy Broomer wrote a book called The Impact Zone in which they talk about that a lot and it's very important. So if you have that image, it changes everything about the way you swing because they were trying to help the ball in the air like most golfers do, mm-hmm. most high handicappers do. Mm-hmm. Well, to help the ball in the air, you have to either, and it's sitting on the ground, you either have to be coming from underground to hit it, in which you chunk it and hit it fat, or if you miss the ground trying to do that, you hit it thin. Just by telling them that difference, so that as they set up, they looked 2 or 3 inches in front of the ball and said, my intention is to swing through the ball to that lowest point before my swing comes up. The quality of the sound of their impact and the crispness of the impact changed dramatically.
I bet.
And one of the players actually played way better than he'd ever played before, just with that understanding. Now, you could say, well, this is a physical part of the game, but the mental part of understanding how the club works and what it is you're trying to accomplish, not how to swing the club, but what you're trying to get it to do changes everything for them. Mm-hmm. You like that one?
I like that one a lot. And it really kind of dovetails off of the last two episodes that we did before you came on last week with Jim Hardy and talking about ball flight.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Very, very interesting. And I can see asking that question a lot. What it's very simple, too, because it's such a great a graphic image in your mind. What is the lowest part of your swing? And so many people are, you know, don't even understand, you know, like to get different ball flights, you have different golf clubs. Each club can help you out here.
Right.
Because of
but
the
you
loft.
Have to know how it's designed to be used. And I stood on the range and watched an instructor trying to get his student to get to his left side through the swing. Mm-hmm. And he put a ball under his right foot, and he put a glove under one arm, and, you know, he's doing all these things. And he'd eventually get the guy to the left side. Then he'd say, fine, now let's play a shot. Boom, falling back and hit and on his right side.
Yep.
And I just walked over, and I asked the same question. I said, where do you think the bottom of the swing is? He says, right at or slightly behind the ball. And I said, that's why when you swing, you fall back on your right side, because that's the only way you can get the club under the ball and on the way up at the ball is to be falling back to your right side. And if you get to your left side, the bottom of the swing is going to be in front of the ball. So as soon as I explained that, every shot he got to his left side. And it's something really important for instructors to explain to their students that's where the bottom of the swing is. And once they do that, it's not hard for the student to get to his or her left side. So I hope that's helpful.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm playing.
Helpful for all your listeners.
And for me as well. I'm playing with a friend this week who this is a chronic problem for him, and I cannot wait to ask him the question. It's the first time he does this. First time he just rolls the ball and tops it along. I was like, it's going to be the perfect question.
And, in fact, you can say, I want you to hit a couple of shots where you're not looking at the ball, you're looking 2 inches in front of the ball and saying, that's where I'm trying to get the club down to in front of the ball. Mm-hmm. And see what happens. Mm-hmm. I think he'll be pleasantly surprised.
I hope so.
Good.
So the lessons that you give, like you said, you have these corporate lessons. You work with people, one-on-one, face-to-face. But from our conversations in the past, you have students that you don't get to be holding a club with them.
Well, I would say more of my lessons are actually by phone or Skype than in person. I don't necessarily follow the pros that I work with around to all the different tournaments. I work with players on the PGA Tour, the Nationwide Tour, the Ladies European Tour, the Ladies Tour. I just had a phone lesson with a player at the Zurich Classic in New Orleans. He was calling me from the French Quarter in New Orleans this morning. And then when we get off the phone, I'm going to be talking to a Ladies European Tour player who's in France right now.
Wow.
So it's everywhere. And on Skype, sometimes I can actually get them to show me their putting stroke.
Sure.
But mostly it's about the mental game. And I can tell by the way they describe their patterns and what they're going through and do and give them a lot of great things to work with from the Zen golf point of view, from understanding the mental game, that 6-inch course between your ears.
Yeah. That big, vast 6-inch course.
We can work with that by phone or Skype.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, then if how does your structure work on that? Because here we have an audience of people from all over the world that are listening to this and getting these wonderful lessons from you already. But if they wanted to get in touch with you to do personal lessons via phone or Skype.
They do it right through my website, zengolf.com, mm-hmm. and hit contact us, or just send an email to info@zengolf.com. And I am happy to offer all of your members, the members of Golf Smarter, 25% discount on phone and Skype lessons.
Well, thank
and
you.
Certainly the yeah. same applies if they want to come to the Ojai Valley Inn and Spa Resort and have an in-person lesson with me.
So they just need to mention Golf Smarter?
Golf Smarter and say, I'm a member of Golf Smarter.
Golf Smarter.
And they will get their discount.
That's very kind. That's very nice. Thank you. And I'm sure that you're going to be hearing, because the Golf Smarter members are far more active than the normal listeners who, you know, listen on every other week. But these people are... I'm so grateful, but they're listening every episode that comes out. Go back and listen to other episodes. So I appreciate you extending that offer to them. Thank you.
Absolutely. And, you know, all I can offer is more consistency, less frustration, and lower scores.
Well, that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a playing partner.
That you have to go to golfmatch.com or something like that. You should have a social network where people can find other Golf Smarter playing partners.
Oh, I like it. It's called Facebook.
All right. That one.
So now, what about those folks? Thanks again for that offer. What about those folks who either have, let's say, anger issues, or not just anger management issues like that? What about those perfectionists? Those people who get so frustrated because they like to have everything in control, and they want to be perfect, which golf is not a game of perfect. I guess they shouldn't be playing golf in the first place, but they do because they want to get better and better and better. How do you deal with that as a mental coach?
Well, you know, I had an interesting experience about an angry golfer. Writer from a golf magazine came out, and he has a very fiery temper. And he said, you know, work with me on this. Let me see what's going on. And we got him calmed down, and he actually played better. And he said, you know what? I miss being angry. and it was really it was interesting, because it really struck a chord. And I realized some people use anger on the golf course as their way of venting, mm-hmm. and getting it out, because – they can't get mad at their boss, and they can't get mad and take it out on their wives, and they can't take it out or husbands, and they can't take it out on their kids and their dogs. And the only place that they feel like it's okay to get mad is the golf course. Hmm. Now, it's a problem, because it isn't fun for other people.
It's not appropriate.
It really isn't appropriate. It isn't fun. But there are some people who... that's their place to get mad. And, you know, you try to say, I'm sorry you're not having a good time. And they sort of say they're not having a good time. But underneath, they are having a good time in that they're getting their anger out. And they're cursing and moaning and just, you know, angry, it seems like, all through the round. And the last round, and they finish, and they go, I hate this game. What time do we play tomorrow? Wait a minute. If you hate this game, why don't you quit? No. I want to play.
This is healthy for me.
So what's going on there? There's something going on there where they say they don't like it, but they like it.
Yeah.
Because it's their way of getting those emotions out that they don't get to show other places. And as I said, it's unfortunate for the people who have to play with them, but for some people, that's the case. As far as perfectionists go, I think that the comment I made earlier about giving yourself room to play, it's just so much more fun. If you think about it, what shots do you enjoy? Do you only enjoy the perfect ones? Well, I'll tell you what. Ben Hogan was asked how many shots in a round he felt he could hit exactly the way he wanted. And he said, if I hit 3 shots in a round exactly the way I wanted, it was a good round of golf.
Wow.
So do you think we could please lower our standards and relax a little bit? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're trying to make higher standards than Ben Hogan. And he was kind of a good ball striker. So relax. Just, you know, say, you know, that was close. If I do a little more of this or a little more of that, it'll be a great shot. But if you keep saying your shots are terrible when they're not perfect, you're going to hit all terrible shots and you're going to be miserable.
Right.
I'd rather you say, and, you know, unless you hit one really squirrely and really sideways, why don't you say, that was close. you know, it was pin high or it was on my line or it was the trajectory I want or it was the shape I wanted, just a little more of it than I wanted. You know, just say it was close. Say if I do a little less of this or a little more of that, it could be really good. And then you'll start building your confidence and you'll enjoy the game a lot more.
Confidence is critical.
I want to leave you with this thought. People think if only I played better, I'd enjoy it more. It actually works the other way around. If you'd enjoy it more, you'd play better.
Absolutely. So, I couldn't agree
more. Thanks for having me on, Fred. I really appreciate it.
Time to go, huh?
I do need to go.
All right.
And you need to go because you have 5 minutes to get to your appointment.
Yeah, well, I had 17 more questions for you. But again, thanks so much.
We'll do it another time.
We'll do another. And congratulations. Happy anniversary on the book. And thank you again for that generous offer of the 25% discount for Golf Smarter members.
Absolutely. Yes, it's the 10th anniversary of the publication of Zen Golf. And we have over 250,000 copies sold around the world. In 8 different languages. We just got our contract for the Finland version, the Finnish version of Zen Golf. So we've got a wide variety of languages, and you know, it shows it's a global game, and I'm doing Skype lessons all over the world. So tune in.
Thanks so much. And the book is, all of your books are available on the Golfer Smart here at golfsmarter.com. Thanks, Dr. Joe. We'll talk to you again soon.
Take care. Okay, bye-bye, Fred.
Well, I'll put the information and the link to Dr. Joe's offer on this show's blog post at golfsmarter.com. So if my conversation isn't enough for you, then this should be a no-brainer. Set up your own half-hour conversation with Dr. Joseph Parent and get 25% off when you mention Golf Smarter for members only. And of course, while you're there, sign up for his free newsletter. Questions, comments, suggestions? Please join our Golf Smarter conversation on Facebook or click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.